From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
As of press time Monday, the government shutdown in Washington, D.C. continued. Democrats making the rounds of the talk show circuit on Sunday seemed less than impressed with the offering from President Trump on Saturday. We bring you here the president's remarks in their entirety.
Just a short time ago, I had the honor of presiding over the swearing-in of five new great American citizens. It was a beautiful ceremony and a moving reminder of our nation's proud history of welcoming legal immigrants from all over the world into our national family. I told them that the beauty and majesty of citizenship is that it draws no distinctions of race or class or faith or gender or background. All Americans, whether first generation or 10th generation, are bound together in love and loyalty, friendship and affection. We are all equal. We are one team and one people proudly saluting one great American flag. We believe in a safe and lawful system of immigration, one that upholds our laws, our traditions, and our most cherished values. Unfortunately, our immigration system has been badly broken for a very long time. Over the decades, many presidents and many lawmakers have come and gone, and no real progress has been made on immigration. We are now living with the consequences, and they are tragic, brought about by decades of political stalemate, partisan gridlock, and national neglect. There is a humanitarian and security crisis on our southern border that requires urgent action. Thousands of children are being exploited by ruthless coyotes and vicious cartels and gangs. One in three women is sexually assaulted on the dangerous journey north. In fact, many loving mothers give their young daughters birth control pills for the long journey up to the United States because they know they may be raped or sexually accosted or assaulted. Nearly 50 migrants a day are being referred for urgent medical care. Vast quantities of lethal narcotics are flooding through our border and into our communities, including meth, cocaine, heroin, and fentanyl. Drugs kill 78,000 Americans a year and cost our society in excess of $700 billion. Heroin alone kills 300 Americans a week, 90% of which comes across our southern border. We can stop heroin. Illegal immigration reduces wages and strains public services. The lack of border control provides a gateway, and a very wide and open gateway, for criminals and gang members to enter the United States, including the criminal aliens who murdered a brave California police officer only a day after Christmas. I've gotten to know and love angel moms, dads, and family who lost loved ones to people illegally in our country. I want this to end. It's got to end now. These are not talking points. These are the heartbreaking realities that are hurting innocent, precious human beings every single day on both sides of the border. As a candidate for president, I promised I would fix this crisis, and I intend to keep that promise one way or the other. Our immigration system should be the subject of pride, not a source of shame, as it is all over the world. Our immigration system should be the envy of the world, not a symbol of disunity and dysfunction. The good news is these problems can all be solved. but only if we have the political courage to do what is just and what is right. Both sides in Washington must simply come together, listen to each other, put down their armor, build trust, reach across the aisle, and find solutions. It is time to reclaim our future from the extreme voices who fear compromise and demand open borders, which means drugs pouring in, human trafficking, and a lot of crime. That is why I am here today to break the logjam and provide Congress with a path forward to end the government shutdown and solve the crisis on the southern border. If we are successful in this effort, we will then have the best chance in a very long time at real bipartisan immigration reform. And it won't stop here. It will keep going until we do it all. The proposal I will outline today is based on, first and foremost, on input from our border agents and Homeland Security professionals, and professionals they are. They know what they're doing. It is a compassionate response to the ongoing tragedy on our southern border. In recent weeks, we have met with large numbers of Democrat lawmakers to hear their ideas and suggestions. By incorporating the priorities of rank-and-file Democrats in our plan, we hope they will offer their enthusiastic support, and I think many will. This is a common-sense compromise both parties should embrace. The radical left can never control our borders. I will never let it happen. Walls are not immoral. In fact, they are the opposite of immoral because they will save many lives and stop drugs from pouring into our country. Our plan includes the following: $800 million in urgent humanitarian assistance, $805 million for drug detection technology to help secure our ports of entry, an additional 2,750 border agents and law enforcement professionals, 75 new immigration judge teams to reduce the court backlog of, believe it or not, almost 900,000 cases. However, the whole concept of having lengthy trials for anyone who sets one foot in our country unlawfully must be changed by Congress. It is unsustainable. It is ridiculous. Few places in the world would even consider such an impossible nightmare. Our plan includes critical measures to protect migrant children from exploitation and abuse. This includes a new system to allow Central American minors to apply for asylum in their home countries, and reform to promote family reunification for unaccompanied children, thousands of whom wind up on our border doorstep. To physically secure our border, the plan includes $5.7 billion for a strategic deployment of physical barriers, or a wall. This is not a 2,000-mile concrete structure from sea to sea. These are steel barriers in high-priority locations. Much of the border is already protected by natural barriers such as mountains and water. We already have many miles of barrier, including 115 miles that we are currently building or under contract. It will be done quickly. Our request will add another 230 miles this year in the areas our border agents most urgently need. It will have an unbelievable impact. If we build a powerful and fully designed see-through steel barrier on our southern border, the crime rate and drug problem in our country would be quickly and greatly reduced. Some say it could be cut in half. because these criminals, drug smugglers, gangs, and traffickers do not stop at our border. They permeate throughout our country, and they end up in some places where you'd least expect them. They go all over our country. A steel barrier will help us stop illegal immigration while safely directing commerce to our lawful ports of entry. Many of these security ideas have been proposed by Democrats themselves, and all of them have been supported by Democrats in the past, including a physical barrier wall or fence. Furthermore, in order to build the trust and goodwill necessary to begin real immigration reform, there are two more elements to my plan. Number one is 3 years of legislative relief for 700,000 DACA recipients brought here unlawfully by their parents at a young age many years ago. This extension will give them access to work permits, social security numbers, and protection from deportation, most importantly. Secondly, our proposal provides a 3-year extension of temporary protected status, or TPS. This means that 300,000 immigrants whose protected status is facing expiration will now have 3 more years of certainty so that Congress can work on a larger immigration deal, which everybody wants, Republicans and Democrats. And our farmers and vineyards won't be affected because lawful and regulated entry into our country will be easy and consistent. That is our plan. Border security, DACA, TPS, and many other things. Straightforward, fair, reasonable, and common sense with lots of compromise. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has pledged to bring this bill to a vote this week in the United States Senate. Our proposal is not intended to solve all of our immigration challenges. This plan solves the immediate crisis, and it is a horrible crisis. It is a humanitarian crisis like we rarely see in our country. And it provides humanitarian relief, delivers real border security, and immediately reopens our federal government. If we are successful in this effort, then we can start the border project of remaking our immigration system for the 21st century. Once the government is open and we have made a down payment on border security and immigration reform starts to happen, I plan to convene weekly bipartisan meetings at the White House so we can do a finished product, a great product, a product that we can all be proud of having to do with that elusive immigration problem. Whatever we do, I can promise you this. I will never forget that my first duty and ultimate loyalty is to you, the American people. Any reforms we make to our immigration system will be designed to improve your lives, make your community safer, and make our nation more prosperous and secure for generations to come. Thank you, and God bless America. Thank you.
Sunday marked 1 week since the arrest by the FBI of American journalist Marzia Hashemi. Hashemi resides in Iran and is a presenter for Press TV based in Tehran. She was in the U.S. visiting family and working on a Black Lives Matter documentary when she was arrested a week ago Sunday. Very little information has been made available, although there have been reports that she is not the subject of a criminal investigation, but rather being held as a material witness. Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif offered these comments about her case.
She is a famous journalist. She's done nothing but journalism. And the arrest of Mrs. Hashemi is a very clear affront to freedom of expression, a political abuse of an innocent individual. And I believe the United States should release her immediately without further delay.
The Committee to Protect Journalists, based in New York, has also called for her release, will be following this case as it develops. The foreign ministers of Russia and Germany sat down and talked on Friday, discussing a number of issues of mutual concern. This was Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov opening a press conference held jointly with Germany's Foreign Minister Heiko Maas on Friday in Moscow.
First part of our very useful talks. These talks have been very constructive, filled with various topics of discussion. Despite the differences of opinion on some subject matters, our cooperation continues to go further across a number of tracks. We have confirmed our willingness to reinforce our cooperation, as I believe, we both believe that amid all the difficulties and troubles in Europe and in the world, a constructive dialogue between Russia and Germany is of special importance and necessity. We positively assess the development of our trade and economic ties despite the sanctions regime started by Washington. Berlin is a very important trade partner of ours. In between January and October, the trade grew by 23%, comparing to what we had last year, 2017, amounting to $49.8 billion. We do appreciate the fact that Germany continues to support the Nord Stream 2 pipeline project. It sees it as a commercial initiative which is meant to help to diversify the supply chain and, in addition to that, to enhance the energy security of the European continent. We also appreciate the work we do as part of the Russian-German Year of Educational Cooperation. It will continue up to the year 2020. It is meant to build up the cooperation between the academic and university circles. This kind of year is very important in terms of building trust between the nations, preventing the people of our countries from being alienated to each other, as well as enhancing people-to-people ties. Discussing the international issues, we paid utmost attention to the situation around the U.S. withdrawal from the INF Treaty. It is clear that the derailment of that treaty will bring very negative consequences to the world and international stability. On the heels of the U.S. withdrawal from the treaty, we see that now the whole architecture of the arms control is being targeted, including the START treaty and all the prospects of further nuclear non-proliferation and disarmament, as well as the very foundations of the non-proliferation regime treaty, is also in danger. We discussed it in great detail with my counterpart, and Russia has confirmed that despite the ultimatum set forward by the U.S. and the failure to achieve any progress during the consultations which took place in Geneva on the 15th of January, we are ready to continue to talk and present real facts, all that in order to preserve that unique dialogue which to a large extent ensures the strategic stability in the world. But do you understand the Europeans' concerns, the concerns of Europe, because, well, the international world sees a lot of diplomats who still remember the crisis which emerged as a result of the Persian missiles placed in Europe in last century. Discuss Ukraine and the need to consistently develop and implement the Minsk agreements. There has been no progress on that track, as well as there has been no progress on the track of the Normandy Quartet, and I mean the summit of the quartet which took place in 2015 and 2016. In Paris and Berlin, there a number of agreements were reached on the security and political matters, but unfortunately, because of the Ukraine's position, these arrangements have not been fulfilled so far. We believe that our European colleagues have already turned their attention to the blatant violations by Ukraine of their international obligations, which are to ensure the freedoms and rights, religious and language rights of the minorities, as well as we turn the attention of our colleagues to the rise of nationalism and extremist sentiments in Ukraine. We are to discuss Syria later on, because on that track we've seen some certain progress, and I hope that the arrangements reached during the summit between Germany, France, Turkey and Russia in Istanbul a couple of months ago, and I mean, first and foremost, the need to start the work of the Constitutional Committee as soon as possible, will be fulfilled in the immediate future. We briefed our colleagues on the upcoming meetings. On Monday, we will be receiving the new Syrian envoy, Mr. Peterson, and with him, we will be holding discussions, and we are looking forward to hear from him about his plans as of how to arrange the work of the Constitutional Committee. He spent a couple of days in Damascus discussing this and many other issues with the Syrian leadership. Germany, this and next year, will be the presiding country in the UN Security Council, and we are looking forward to effective cooperation with Germany on that track. I'm sure that participation of Europe in the work of the Security Council will contribute to the enhancement of the efforts applied by everyone to make all the arrangements true. Thank you for your attention. I give the word to my counterpart. Thank you.
Thank you very much, dear Sergei. Thank you for hosting and welcoming me to Moscow. And we agree that the international community is facing challenges, serious challenges right now. And so an honest and tight dialogue is utterly important right now, with clear positions and clear cooperation proposals and clear stance on international issues that we took. Since my last visit in May 2018, we've achieved a lot more than in the previous years. The educational and science partnership, and also the dialogue, high-level dialogue on the security issues, and the security working group is working again. And we also discussed that to commemorate the siege of Leningrad, we are going to help a hospital for siege survivors in St. Petersburg, and that is going to be a new signal this month. We also discussed again the INF Treaty, and this treaty for 30 years has been keeping Europe safe, and it's still a very important cornerstone of the security architecture in Europe. So we're really interested in keeping it going. It affects us in a major way. So we do everything we can to make sure that this treaty has a future. We think that Russia can save this treaty. It's no secret that we, just like other NATO states, think that there's a cruise missile that violates this treaty, and it has to be destroyed so that there is compliance with the treaty on the part of Russia. But communication is still going on, and we see that Russia is ready to continue this dialogue and to use this time to give all necessary information and contribute to the INF, to keep an INF treaty going. But this treaty is not enough. It is also important to talk about control over arms to continue this dialogue and keep it on the international agenda. I support this initiative, and I know that it's an important topic, but the issue of the international arms control is an important issue, but it hasn't been paid enough attention to in the past. So I invited Mr. Lavrov to a conference in Berlin to discuss new arms, and I hope that it will be attended by many different players, and we will be able to discuss all these autonomous arms systems, the robotic weapons that have been developed in recent years. And there is just not enough international control over those weapons. And at this level, I hope that we will move forward in this area, and we will include this issue in the international architecture of arms control. We also discussed the situation in Ukraine. Russia and Ukraine are responsible for making sure that we move forward in the Normandy 4 format so that there is a real ceasefire, and also the situation in the Sea of Azov and what happened there. We were also concerned with that. We don't want new conflicts there. We want free navigation there, and we're happy that this is happening right now. The November crisis should not repeat itself. We don't want those situations happen again, so we need clarity going forward. And what's happening now, and the fact that there is freedom of navigation now, we need to keep it that way, and that needs to be a permanent situation in that region. As for Ukrainian military detained in Russia, we think that they should be set free, and we will continue to our talks on Syria, and there are a lot of issues and questions here. All the interested parties that can influence the Syrian regime, all these players should be responsible in their actions and work with other international players. We need to work with the new UN envoy, Peterson, who started in this new office in the beginning of the year. Also, the situation in Idlib, access of humanitarian organizations, and working with refugees who come back to Syria. We need to work there. And also, the constitutional process is an important area, and we discussed all those areas during our talks, and we know that it's obvious now that we can only achieve results if we continue the dialogue. So it's good that we're talking to each other today, and we will continue our talks. We agreed that we would keep talking in the next weeks, in the following weeks. Interfax, please. My question is for Mr. Lavrov. What do you think about the fact that Ukraine is not going to open any polling stations in Russia, and also would not allow Russian observers as part of the OSCE monitoring mission in Ukraine? And also, what can you say about the prospects of the Normandy 4 format?
We have a negative attitude towards this, and what we see is that their decision not to open polling stations at diplomatic missions of Ukraine and Russia, nothing but the desire of Ukraine to artificially influence the voting outcomes in favor of the current government. This way, Ukraine is stripping millions of Ukrainians of the right to vote. I mean, Ukrainians who live and work in Russia, and that is a violation of all norms which are existent and which are supposed to be in place within the framework of the OSCE, if we are talking about free and democratic elections, of course. Mr. Klimkin, Foreign Minister of Ukraine, explained it. The decision not to open polling stations at Ukrainian diplomatic missions by saying that there is no safety guarantees, well, that's beyond criticism. On a regular basis, we hold a lot of international events, the World Cup for one. Hundreds of thousands of people visited it, including many people from Ukraine, and there was not a single incident which would could be said to jeopardize the security. We have received no complaints, no nothing. But it's a whole other thing to see when the elections take place in Russia. We open our polling stations everywhere, in Kiev, in our general consular missions. And it's not the first time when we see that the pravi sector, the right sector activists and neo-Nazis surround our diplomatic missions and prevent people from coming and casting their votes.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.